Welcome, everybody, to Redacted on this Tuesday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we cover the stories the mainstream media largely ignores. We are the largest anti-war show on the internet. And today, we've got a couple of anti-war stories that we want to talk about. Specifically, we'll get to China. We're going to talk about why the United States is ramping up its rhetoric and movement with weapons and nuclear submarines towards China and what the Chinese response on that will be.
Plus, we are going to talk about war in Somalia as well. We are not for that, and we're going to talk about civilian casualties.
Yeah, and we're also, of course, going to talk about the latest on the bank runs and why, of course, as we've been talking about on the show, this is all planned, this is all scheduled, this is all part of their plan to move us to a central bank digital currency away from cash, and the newest round of banks could be on the verge of collapse. There's major warnings, of course, that Credit Suisse is about to collapse. So what does this mean for your bank account, your retirement, your financial future? We're going to look at all of those angles as Redacted starts right now. Welcome in, everybody, to Redacted on this Tuesday. I hope everyone is doing well. I hope everyone's keeping their sanity amidst this craziness right now. Kind of feels a little crazy, doesn't it?
Yes, and last night I saw people in the chat saying, why is the show on early? So if you did not change your time over the weekend, the show will be earlier for you. I know some people in Europe have not changed time yet. And that made me laugh because they're like, why am I here? Like, they're asking it and you're here in the chat.
You're watching
so
live and we are
here.
Thank
you for showing up.
Yeah, so for 2 weeks. I mean, yeah. So we are going to continue 4 p.m. Eastern time. We had to pick a time zone and, you know, we see a bulk of our audience is in the United States. So, of course, we're going to stick to that time zone, 4 p.m. Eastern time. A lot of European viewers. We are in Europe. We are in Western European time. So things are all wacky. Can we please get rid of daylight saving time? I swear to God, every 6 months I bring this up. Can someone be brave enough, a politician, to just end it with a stroke of a pen? You do all these other executive orders.
Yeah.
You know, we send billions to Ukraine. Can you just get rid of daylight saving time? It's the worst.
You know why that bothers me is last night I tried to put Eve, our six-year-old, to bed, and she's like, it's not time yet. Sun's still up. And I was like, you're going to bed anyway.
See, this
just
is the
another
problem.
Reason to fight, to go to bed.
It also makes writing the newsletter a little bit more difficult as we have to write the newsletter about an hour earlier. But hey, you don't care about us, right? Well, maybe you do. Hopefully you care about us, but we care about you. And so it's a lot, you know, we put a lot of hard work into the daily newsletter. We hope that you subscribe to it. It's free. All you need to do is go to redacted.inc. And we cover a lot of different stories in there. It's not a, you know, it's not a copycat of this show. It's a companion. It's like the director's track to this show. So go to redacted.inc, not.com. Put in your email address. You'll receive a welcome email from me, Clayton@redacted.inc. You'll get an email. You just need to confirm your email, though. You need to verify it. Otherwise, Google, Yahoo, they think that, you know, you don't want it, so you put it in spam folders. So you might be in your spam folder. Welcome. Get that welcome email and then click verify. And then tomorrow morning at about 6:30 a.m. Eastern time, you'll receive the daily newsletter. We think you'll really like it. We try to make you laugh. We try to make you smile. And we also cover
some of
the big news of the day.
Did you like my pie joke?
I liked your pie. Yeah, today is pie day.
And so the joke was, if you haven't read already, why should you never bring up pie at a party?
Pie day?
Mm-hmm.
Why should you never bring up
because
pie at a party?
Because it goes on forever. That was a good one. I had to text that to Miles, my son. And he responded with, that joke has absolute value.
That's pretty good.
That's brilliant.
I love math jokes. Well, he stole it from me because every time we tell each other math jokes, I respond for that. That has absolute value. So bring it. I love math jokes.
All right. Well, we've got four different segments, which means we our show is divided into fractions today.
Yes.
We have four different segments we're going to get to in the show today. So
and
it's divided
every day.
Up and every day. So we're going to start with this story, which is, I'll ask you a question. We're going to talk about the bank runs and everything, what's going on with the bank panic right now. But I'm going to start with a question, sort of a thought-provoking question. You guys put a pin in it as we get to this in a second. why did the government step in and bail out multiple banks and bank depositors over the past few days? And it hung FTX crypto depositors out to dry. Let's just come back to that in a second.
Okay.
Okay. So we're going to put that out there. Everyone was freaking out about FTX collapsing, all these people losing all this money. These banks collapse. Biden administration steps in and is going to make them whole. Okay. So just
does it have to do with FDIC insurance?
I don't know. Put a pin in it for a second. Okay. You guys get your thoughts in on this here in the chat room. We'll see what you have to say on both Rumble and YouTube. But we are at a tipping point right now, guys, this afternoon in U.S. financial history. And you can kind of sense what's happening. What I'm about to show you, I'm about to show you something that will probably make your jaw drop as it did mine going through these numbers. So just wait a second for that. I've got some good news, though, I do want to start with. And I've got some bad news. I want to start with some good news, though. And I'm encouraged because there's been a lot of awareness about the CBDCs over the past few hours, over the past 24 hours, that this is all orchestrated and you're not falling for it. I'm seeing a lot of independent media showing awareness about something we've been talking about on the show for a while. Other independent media have been talking about this, that the Biden administration, of course, wants to move us off of cash into central bank digital currencies.
Yes.
And this isn't like some conspiracy theory where people are saying, oh, you're a tinfoil hat kind of person. No, no, no. Even Tucker, we did the show yesterday, 4 p.m. Eastern time. Then even Tucker covered it last night on his show, that there's this movement towards central bank digital currencies. There seems to be...
Kim Iverson had a similar take as well.
Yeah, Kim Iverson. So there's starting to be an awareness about this. Catherine Austin Fitz has been covering this. The team at InfoWars has been covering this. So I am encouraged. To me, that's good news. That we are not being duped. We are aware what they are doing and planning right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of my just good news feeling on all of this, that this is not like conspiratorial. This is what they're doing. But we did our show where I said that they're going to do this. They're going to move us closer to a digital bank, digital currency, get you off of cash. And one way to screw them over right now actually is to take out as much cash as you can. Take out as much cash as you can and store it wherever you feel safe, or convert some of your money right now to gold and silver, because boy, that would screw them big time. Absolutely piss them off. They do not want you to do that. They absolutely don't want you to buy Bitcoin. They don't want you to buy gold and silver. They don't want you to take money out of the bank.
Well, some of them don't even want us to discuss taking money out on the bank, like
right.
We reported yesterday, and Michael Schellenberger expanded the story about how, who was it, Mark?
Mark Kelly,
the senator from Arizona, had said that he does not want even discussions because they called this the first Twitter-based run on the bank, which, what does that even mean?
Well, he wants censorship. He doesn't want people to talk about it on social media.
Because that would promote your fears and maybe you go and take your money out. And,
right.
Of course, we all know there's not enough physical dollars in place to support the American economy. By some estimates, it's just 4% of the money in our economy exists in paper form. And I think that's even high. Some people say it's as low as 1 or 2%.
Yeah, we're going to get to all of
and
that.
And so if we were all to panic, there just wouldn't be enough. So, you know, it's interesting that they're blaming, though, users, nameless usernames, rather than the media. Because what are we doing by creating panic any more than mainstream media?
Right. Well, and they want, and again, mainstream media, they're in bed on all of this, you know, to drive this panic and this awareness about this, because then that means you will stay away from cash. They want you off cash. They want to move you in this way towards this thing. The bad news now, and there's lots of it. Go ahead, Philip.
This is David. And really quick, I didn't know if you saw what Michael Saylor tweeted yesterday, but he says, and he's talking specifically Bitcoin, but what he's getting at is alternatives, is a bank that can't lend out, invest, gamble, dilute, debase, freeze, or seize your assets. It works all the time, everywhere in the world, and is unstoppable. And that's the thing. Like, they're trying to make it, because these banks make these horrible investments. These, you know, the people that hold our money, they're greedy. They can, you know, loan out 10 times or even more than that now than what we actually have in there. And there's no way for us to control it. So he's saying, you know, Bitcoin is one of those things where we need to take control of our own money.
Yeah, and that's why it's up 10% today. 10% this morning.
That's a big jump.
So bad news now. There's lots of it. Credit Suisse is about to become the next big bank to collapse. They're falling like dominoes. Here are the headlines today. Credit Suisse shares fall to all-time low as bank announces it has found material weakness. just hours after Wall Street expert predicted that it would be the next to fall after the Silicon Valley Bank. So Credit Suisse shares fell 5% to an all-time low, $8 billion in losses.
I love the sort of archaeological speak there. Like, we just found it. We were digging and we found this and we didn't know. Like, it was hidden in our balance sheet somewhere.
That's, this weakness? This
We
found this material weakness in our walls, in our foundation.
I mean,
you don't know that this is here? The truth is, of course they know it's here. That's the point. They all know it's here, right? And the FDIC a few months ago planned all of this.
They're supposed to be professional bean counters. Like, you need to know where all the beans are. You don't just find something, a material weakness.
Well, I mean, here's the thing, right? The FDIC only has $200 billion in cash on hand to insure over $9 trillion in deposits. So what happens if all of those people suddenly want their money in cash? It's impossible because that cash doesn't actually exist. The total financial Armageddon. So in case of a bank run, there are over $9 trillion deposited dollars in the U.S. banking system. How are you going to cover $9 trillion? You can't, with only $200 billion in assets.
Well, we saw that happen in Greece, in Turkey.
In Cyprus.
ATMs shut down.
Yeah.
So come back tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. And Afghanistan, there's, your money's gone. It's gone. Here is the leaked FDIC meeting from a few months ago where they admit this exact problem. Watch.
Should be accessible when people need to know. But I don't think you have much hope of reaching a public that doesn't have a professional need to know.
I completely agree with that. I almost think you'd scare the public if you put this out. Like, why are they telling me this? Should I be concerned about my bank? Like, my insurance company doesn't tell me what they're doing with my assets. They just assume they're going to pay my claim. Right. It's I think you've got to think of the unintended consequences of taking a public that has more full faith and confidence in the banking system than maybe people in this room do, that we want them to have full faith and confidence in the banking system. They know the FDIC insurance is there. They know it works. They put their money in. They're going to get their money out. So there's a select crowd of people that are in the institutional side. And if they want to understand this, they're going to find a way to understand this. There's a bunch of law firms represented in this room. There's a bunch of people that will charge them by the hour, a lot of money to explain this all to them. And it's fine. I don't have a problem with that. And they all have huge staffs. But I would be careful about the unintended consequences of starting to blast too much of this out in the general public. I wondered whether there are some market
quiet
tests
basically,
of what basically you're being heard.
Basically, keep it quiet. Is the answer here.
I mean, how do we really communicate with the stupid little peons?
Right.
Because there will be smart people who figure it out, but the rest of them, how do we manipulate and control the stupid people is what they're saying.
Yeah, and just let those people believe that, hey, this money is there, that this money is available, and don't worry about it. Don't even ask any questions. Just go along with it. Now, if you need
it... along, your pretty little head.
Now, if you needed any more proof of this, that this was all orchestrated, the feds alerted the Israelis to get their money out ahead of time. So we learned that Israeli firms transferred $1 billion out of Silicon Valley Bank to Israel before the seizure by the feds.
What?
Yeah. So again, when Biden admitted the other day in that speech yesterday morning that, yes, we knew about this last week, I alerted my team, they knew about this last week? And waited, of course, till Friday to get the messaging out about this. So they knew ahead of time what was going on here. Oh, Israel, you guys might want to get your money out because what we're about to do is seize this bank.
Nice of them to tell the rest of us.
Isn't it amazing? Like, it's unbelievable. Just, hey, just wait. Don't worry about it. So here's the other part of this big bad news, which is say goodbye to your local banks. So I think that this is all lockdown 2.0. happening here, because if you think about what happened during lockdowns, right, the lockdowns were a consolidation of power. The Walmarts, the Amazons,
sure,
the Target, all of those big corporations were deemed essential and made off fine, right, because they could get deliveries out, they could absorb the lack of foot traffic in their stores, and the small businesses went under.
Yes.
Small businesses collapsed. The same thing is about to happen now. And they wanted that to happen, by the way. They wanted to push the small guys out. They wanted to consolidate power. They wanted to push those small businesses under. And this is exactly what
Carol Roth
writes about in her book called The War on Small Businesses, How Lockdowns Crushed Small Businesses and Destroyed America. The same thing is happening now in the banking sector to local banks, small local banks. That's why I think it's lockdowns 2.0 all over again. Dozens of major regional lending banks have seen their stocks tank in the past 24 to 48 hours, as much as 70%. Regional banks, according to MarketWatch, are seeing a flight of deposits as too big to fail mega banks. So people are pulling their money out of these small little regional banks and flooding them into the big banks. And this is exactly what they want. Allow these small banks to collapse, consolidate power at the hands of, you know, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, a few key big banks.
Well, it's the small banks, too, that are fighting back on the reporting of microtransactions because they say this will crush us. We can't actually. So when we reported on the changes to the tax legislation that would go after, let's say, $600 Venmo transactions or microtransactions, and they're saying report this directly to the federal government, the Association of Small Banks, in fact, there was a spokesperson for the Small Bank Association on the Wealthability podcast, I refer you to that, who said this is a war on small banks. And why then would the government say launch this war on small banks to get after transactions that it wants to?
Right here.
Yeah, for this very reason.
Here's the reason.
Well, and also it's like the big banks all had foreknowledge of this, but the little banks are never notified. Because, like, I don't know if you guys have talked about it or if it was in the newsletter, but Silicon Valley Bank CEO Greg Becker sold $3.6 million of his stock under trading plan less than 2 weeks before they disclosed the extensive losses that led to the failure. So he sold that many shares 2 weeks before this happened. So they had to have some kind of foreknowledge this was coming, correct?
Right. Surely. Again, and just like the Israeli firms were given a heads up, hey, you might want to get your money out of here because we're about to do this. What about the little guy? Can we get a heads up from the federal government on this stuff?
Right. Again, it's the language that's like, oh, we didn't know our financials were bad. All of a sudden they were. For anybody who, let's say, keeps a balance sheet of their own finances or balances their checkbook or whatever banking account, like, that doesn't just happen. You know your financials are bad. You've known it for a long time.
Right. Yeah.
Well, yeah, if the CEO is taken out two weeks before, that means he at least knew 2 weeks before that the books were bad.
Much more than that.
Yeah.
Much more than
right.
that.
Right. Again, so this is not a mystery. We weren't caught by surprise that this was happening. This
it's
was
not
all
like,
here.
And again, the FDIC,
I come back to the meetings. The FDIC is telling us in these meetings that they know about this.
Right.
They told us that the banks aren't solvent. They told us in that meeting that this is all a joke. The emperor has no clothes.
Again, this term material weakness is not like finding a cracked beam in a house by an inspector. That's not how money works.
Right. No, it's not. And this made my jaw drop. So I want to get to this. This is unbelievable. If your jaw doesn't drop, then maybe something's wrong with your jaw, because this is amazing. When I learned this. How much money do you think is in circulation? We've talked tangentially about this, but I'm just going to ask you guys in the chat room right now, how much money do you think is in circulation by the United States government? Remember, more money was created by the U.S. government in the past 3 years than in the entire history of the United States, printed and put into circulation post-COVID.
We're talking about physical money.
Well, I'm talking about...
Or we're talking
about... No, I'm talking
about
money. I'm talking about the actual liquidity. How much money is in circulation, the U.S. money supply? That includes cash, but it also includes...
Money created.
I'll give you the exact... Let me give you the exact definition. I'm kind of jumping ahead here. The exact definition of the money supply is money that includes financial assets held by mainly by households, such as savings deposits, time deposits, balances in the retail money market, mutual funds, liquid financial assets, okay? Currency, traveler's checks, demand, all of it, the money supply in the United States. How much do you think is in circulation in the United States?
I'm going to guess 15, 20 billion.
15 or 20 billion is in circulation. Total money in the money supply of the United States. What would you say, guessing?
You're saying 15 billion, but how much have we given to Ukraine? It has to be more than that.
Okay.
Well, that's still in circulation, though.
Right, but we didn't give them all of, we've given them 15 billion.
Okay, let me
So we did not give them the total. What is the question? In the United States?
It's not a difficult question.
Or in the economy?
Am I speaking?
I think what the difference is, you're talking about physical printed.
Yeah, like that. Yes, that.
No, he's talking about, okay. Just tell us, because we're going to continue to parse out the definitions.
I just read the definition of the money supply to you. To you, traveler's checks, deposits in the bank,
direct deposits. But we're asking appropriate qualifiers.
This is why.
Yeah, because when you say that, I still hear physical. When I'm not thinking like the invisible money that is just the numbers that they added in a computer. Like there's the difference between the money they print and the money that they just add into the computer. So if we're concluding that as well,
all right, okay. We're tanking your punchline. So just
I'm just gonna
chime in and say I'm gonna guess somewhere about 10 to 15 trillion. It would be my guess.
Well, you are spot on. Young Philip, you are spot on. The answer to the U.S. money supply, the total money supply, including those coins and paper notes and all of that, traveler's checks, everything that we run our economy on is 15 trillion. I'm sorry, it's close. 21 trillion. 21 trillion is the U.S. money supply right now. And look at 2020. Like, look at this. This is a five-year chart that I pulled up here for you. A five-year chart. This is the U.S. money supply for 5 years. $21 trillion. The amount of money we've created over the past 3 years is more than our entire U.S. history. That's the money supply of the United States. Now, get this. The amount of actual cash money that the U.S. has in circulation. This is what David was talking about. Like physical money. Coins. Paper. Cash. Coins. Notes. The physical representation of that $21 trillion, how much of the $21 trillion that we just discussed is the main bucket of money, how much actual paper currency and coins exists in the U.S. money supply that is a physical representation of that $21 trillion? Can you guys answer that question?
Well,
I'm going to stick with my $10
billion. $10
billion. Six. Well,
that's a good guess.
Well, no, because if it has historically, just I'd say over the last 20 years, been 4%, that's less than $2 trillion. That's like even 4% would be 0.5 trillion.
Okay. So the answer here, take a look at my laptop here, Philip. This is right from the Federal Reserve's website. From the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System. These are the current numbers, the current ones that they have printed on their website, okay? For the year 2021, over here, top chart, this is $1 bills, $14 billion in $1 bills, $1.4 billion in $2 bills. Who still has a $2 bill? $5 bills, $10 bills, $20 bills, $50 bills, $100 bills. Those are the only ones I use. Just joking. And $500 to $10,000 bills. This is the total. Grand total of cash in United States government in our economy is $53 billion. It's a lot different than the $21 trillion that exists on our money supply. $53 billion exists in cash form in the United States.
So what is that percentage? I can't work that out in my head.
It's less than 2% because, again, we can get into crazy math numbers here, but yeah. I just want to point out that what's crazy about this is that if in order to move you off cash, they don't have much work to do, right? We already are almost off of cash to begin with. Right now, there almost is no physical version of cash in the United States. It doesn't exist. It's all of that money is fake money. It is all fake money, is what I'm trying to point out.
I was going to say, when they removed the gold standard, this is exactly why it was so bad to remove that gold standard, because we could never print more than we had gold. So right. I would love to see those numbers from before Nixon. Like, what was the percentage? It would have been 100%, right? Like,
it was 1-to-1. Yeah. There was a physical representation of gold. Same with the silver dollar coins, right? The same representation, right? It was a 1-to-1.
Well, 2% would be $400 million, so that's even less. I'm just looking at my, I'm doing a quick spreadsheet, but go okay. ahead. Keep okay. going.
So my point is, I mean, let's forget the math for a second.
I cannot.
Okay. But just think higher level here, guys. Like we are already off of a cash system, right? So that 50 billion that exists, this was always going to happen. This was always part of the plan. This is not a mystery. This is why the whole thing is a house of cards. So if you want to really F with these guys, go to your bank and ask for your money in cash. And then take that cash and then convert it to gold. Put it in gold.
Or
silver or yeah. Bitcoin or real estate.
Or whatever it is, your asset, your tangible asset.
Because the secret is they don't have your money. They do not have your money.
Right. Okay. But if that's the case, why are we telling people to,
because then this is a way to protect yourself because the whole system is rigged against these people. And it's only for the elite, as we just heard from the FDIC meeting, it's rigged against these people. If you want to actually have, if you get up every day and you work your ass off and you work for money, when you realize that the money you're working for is worthless, that's a problem. Right?
Yes. I think maybe more responsible for us is to say, identify what your performing asset, your actual asset is, and invest in that rather than say, like, keep money under your mattress because we're not financial advisors. What we should say,
right.
And what we have an entire course around this called the Financial Freedom Academy, which teaches people to identify what is an actual asset because cash is not and hasn't been. We wrote that course in 2018,
right?
When there was not a financial crisis, telling people that money is a liability and not a performing asset. So whatever it is that you decide based on your own research, you're comfortable with real estate, goats, gold, cryptocurrency, whatever it is, we're now being shown that actual US dollars is not.
It's kind of, it's just really crazy to think of, the physical representation of it. Go ahead, Philip.
Well, I was going to like say that, an analogy for this would be if like every week when I go and I purchase groceries, if I don't actually get groceries, I just put on paper that I've got this food supply. I put on paper, well, I've got a dozen eggs. I've got, a couple loaves of bread and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Eventually, I'm going to starve no matter how much my spreadsheet shows I'm stocked on food. If I don't actually have any, I'm going to starve. And exactly. That's what they're doing.
Yeah. Right.
And so once they pull the rug out from us, then people are going to be destroyed as a result of this. What I'm saying is if you can take the money they tell you, maybe you don't even have to get the cash out. Like if you've got a couple $100 in savings and you want to convert that, great. Don't go get it in cash if you don't want it. Although I think having cash on hand is absolutely powerful. But taking some of that and just literally making a deposit into gold, converting it into or Bitcoin. Right, taking those U.S. dollars and converting it into something else. And again, we're not financial advisors, but what we're saying is, like, this is what we've done, right, to take some of that actual U.S. dollars and get it out of the U.S. banking system, out of the U.S. dollar system,
yeah,
out of the Federal Reserve system, and into actual tangible things.
One of the stories that Tom Wheelwright in his Wealthability podcast talks about is that, he's a famous financial advisor for Robert Kiyosaki from The Rich Dad, Poor Dad book. And he talks about how he went to Zimbabwe where their currency had collapsed in recent memory. And he spoke to his tour guide and he said, what did you do when all of a sudden your savings account was worth nothing? And he said, what I did was every time I got a paycheck or I got paid for a tour or what have you, is I took that money and I went and I bought something like a goat or a sheep. Because he knew that he could live off of that, that was a performing asset. He could rent it out. He could live on the milk or what have you. And that was a very tangible representation of a performing asset. So whatever it is that you decide, you're going to buy a car and become an Uber driver. You're going to, get rental real estate. You're going to get some kind of precious metal. Whatever it is that you decide is, or maybe it is an actual goat.
Or chickens.
Or a chicken.
Or producing
what have
eggs
you, right?
for your family. Right?
That's what you need to study is what do you turn your cash, which is a liability, into a performing asset.
So we've got more news to get to here on the show, including we're going to talk about China and so much more. But, we just got to keep our eyes, guys, on what's being told to us by the mainstream media about this bank collapse and how they're spinning it to us right now. So just please pay attention to that. And we're also going to talk about Somalia on the show. We're going to talk about COVID and this new masking. We're going to talk about the hypocrisy around COVID a little bit later in the show. But first, You know, right now, again, we've been beating the gold drum on this, and it just so happens that our friends at Lear Capital are there to be able to help people convert any of their U.S. dollars right now, or their 401k or their IRA into a gold-backed IRA, where you can actually buy precious metals inside of a retirement account. So huge fans of what Lear Capital has done. You can call them right now, 1-800-613-3557, or go to learredacted.com. And right now, they're going to give you, they're doing a special promotion right now where they're giving away 1 ounce of silver for every ounce of gold that you buy. Now, you can buy gold and silver inside of a self-directed retirement account. So again, the reason that we're such big fans of gold and silver is because it has sustained for 5,000 years. It's survived wars, famines, the destruction of government currencies. It has existed and sustained itself. David was talking about the gold standard just a minute ago. You know, arguably the decline of the U.S. dollar started when Nixon took us off the gold standard in the 1970s. That was the beginning of the end. So why do you, you don't have to go along with what the government does. So you can book a call with them right now. It's totally free. Get on the phone with them. They'll give you a free gold kit as well, so you can learn more about it. See if it's a fit for you. It certainly is for me. Call 1-800-613-3557 or go to learredacted.com. Get your free gold and silver investor guide and receive up to and receive that free ounce of silver when you buy an ounce of gold. Really smart move right now. And then, of course, so our thanks to Lear for supporting the show and helping our audience out. It's crazy to see Bitcoin over the past 24 hours going up 10% as well, and gold and silver prices. You know, it's like there was a lot of hope in the stock market that, oh, because the Biden administration is going to jump in and bail all these banks out, that stocks will be fine. And then, you know, gold prices will go back down a little bit, just a, you know, a few dollars, because, oh, people will be back in stocks. And then the contagion continues to set in overnight.
Right.
And so the stock market has just tanked.
And just as yesterday we spoke about how, you know, Bitcoin has the potential to be what the what a government-backed currency cannot, it could just get over that hurdle of just a little bit of, like, user education. And, you know, I had said, like, prove me wrong. Well, and then some investors did.
Well, and it's interesting because, well, I brought up at the beginning of that last segment, you know, put a pin in this about FTX and why didn't they not bail them out? And we got we got all heated about numbers, and I kind of skipped over that, but we'll talk about it now. You know, so the Biden administration doesn't do anything to bail out or help out the depositors who invested in FTX and crypto.
Yes.
Right. But they certainly jumped in and were able to help out Silicon Valley Bank and these depositors, mm-hmm. you know, in the actual Federal Reserve cash system. The financial system, but it's crypto, because they don't want, they see it as an affront to the central bank digital currency, to a U.S. digital dollar. I mean, that's my take on it, right?
But I think that yesterday in his speech, he said, we're not going to bail out investors. We'll only bail out people who put their money there. He said investors knew they were taking a risk. So I think he's making a distinction between crypto investors by calling those out and saying, well, you didn't buy crypto or put deposits there. You were investing in something. And if you're an investor, that's a different story.
But people that were using FTX as a as essentially a bank, you know, they had their FTX
no
like
sympathy
deposit,
because he's
debit
making
cards.
This distinction.
Yeah.
He doesn't care. I think it does have to do with the nuance of the insurance, but I also think that that was a shot across the bow, that he thinks that putting your money in the US dollar is not an investment, which it is. Let's be clear on that. But putting your money in a crypto exchange is an investment, and they don't have sympathy for investors, which is interesting because there are consumer-based laws to protect some investors and not others, which is a distinction that we can maybe get into another time.
Let's talk about China. So while you were all distracted, and while we are all distracted with the banks collapsing, the United States is moving closer to a war with China this evening. Over the past few days, the United States has ramped up its rhetoric and war footing with China, moving huge amounts of ships and weapons towards China in fleet. They're moving a fleet there, which is great. Great news. They delivered brand new nuclear submarines as part of this deal with Australia. That's about to happen. And members of U.S. Congress are openly talking about war with China. And for the first time that I can remember, China is openly talking about the U.S. provoking a war with China, which China never talks about this. They never open their mouths about this. They stay quiet, but not now, as Arnaud Bertrand points out from this Wall Street Journal piece. This is exactly what Xi Jinping had said. And Arnaud says, you know, to my knowledge, this is an unprecedented statement by Xi. So here's what Xi Jinping just said. Western countries led by the United States have implemented all-round containment, encirclement, and suppression against us, bringing unprecedentedly severe challenges to our country's development. And as Caitlin Johnstone reports this morning in a great piece, she calls, and she has a piece up called "The Drums of War with China Are Beating Much Louder Now." And she really lays out what's happening. She says, quote, "Comments from both Washington and Beijing have suddenly become much more pointed and aggressive in recent days, with talk about hot war now being discussed as not just a real possibility, but in many cases, a probability." So that's good.
What's a hot war as opposed to a cold war?
Well, actual missiles are fired rather than the talk of missiles being fired like a cold war. Members of the U.S. Congress are openly saying that we are now at war with China. Oh, yes. So I don't know if you know that, but according to our members of Congress who just got back from Taiwan, we are at war with China, so we better get prepared. Here's Representative Tony Gonzalez, who just returned from Taiwan, where we just sent a whole bunch of weapons. Watch.
My first question is for you, General. I just got back from a trip from Taiwan. It's the second trip to Taiwan in the past 14 months. I spent 20 years in the military, as my good friend August Pfluger pointed out, our chairman pointed out. I know what war looks like. We're at war. I mean, this is a war. It may be a cold war, but this is a war with China. With the People's Republic of China, every single day are invading Taiwan via their cyberspace. Not only that, but the question I have for you is, in particular, your expertise is in air. I spent 5 years as an air crewman flying against China. I know exactly when they come out and they intercept our aircrafts.
Yeah, so he goes on. So I don't know, did you guys vote for war with China? Because I sure as hell didn't. Do these people even understand what they're saying? The deep state is actively pushing for war with China as the U.S. dollar continues its downward spiral. Here's Representative Chris Stewart this week calling for the abolition of the One China policy, meaning Taiwan is not part of China anymore, and that's enough to provoke China into a war that the United States will not win. Remember, the Biden administration's policy on this is there's a One China policy. So here he is saying that there's no One China policy anymore. Listen.
We have this policy of strategic ambiguity, which has served us well for the last 30 years. But I wonder if it's not time for us to declare another policy, a new policy, and that is we will defend Taiwan. It's pretty clear the president seems to think that. And I think if we're going to deter, again, understanding the need for strategic ambiguity before, but times are different now. If we're going to deter, I think we have to be clear in saying, yes, we will defend Taiwan militarily if we have to. Director, am I wrong? And has there been a change in the administration's policy regarding ambiguity?
So,
I mean, let's just do that no matter the cost.
Let's just blow it all up.
Maybe somebody can help me out on this, but deter China from what? What is in that, like, we need to deter China? Deter China from doing what? They're not invading. They're not like
no taking over economically. Taking over economically. Yeah. That's what we're trying to deter them from, is taking over the U.S. dollar hegemony. Although they won't come right out and say it, that's exactly. So they keep trying to pretend that China is trying to invade different places, which is not happening.
Right. And the Wall Street Journal over the weekend published a headline that I was like, are they kidding with this? How Beijing boxed America out of the South China Sea, as if America had some kind of right to be there. And they built bases that we otherwise wanted, even though the Monroe Doctrine prevents other countries from sort of surrounding the central United States. I don't know, that this sort of assumption that we wanted to be there and they did not let us in their part of the world.
In their backyard. Right. It's absurd. Caitlin Johnstone continues, and she brings up probably the most important point of this whole thing, which is that the United States is admitting that we would commit troops to a war with China. President Biden said this. Remember that he said this in that recent 60 Minutes interview where the U.S. would send troops to defend Taiwan.
Yes.
U.S. men and women would go to Taiwan to fight China. He said that. And she points out in her piece, quote, a direct war between nuclear powers. The U.S. war machine is making it more and more explicit that its position on Taiwan is very different from its position on Ukraine, in that it will directly commit American troops to fighting a hot war with China over Taiwan. This is especially concerning because U.S. military encirclement and provocations with Taiwan are making that war more and more likely, in the same way Western provocations made the war in Ukraine more likely.
Although in Ukraine, the United States has resisted putting boots on the ground or at least admitting to direct involvement.
Exactly.
In this case, I'm sure Zelensky is very jealous that he's like, wait a minute, you'd put troops there, but you won't come here? What did I do?
And of course, we've always said since the beginning of this war in Ukraine that the real story is China.
Sure. Right?
That this is just a this is a playground. It's it's preschool.
CBS never did a simulation of a war with the U.S. and Ukraine. They did it in China. That whole, remember that?
Yeah. Yeah. Meet the Press did their whole war simulation with China. How this would, it would tabletop exercise. We have a group of experts on the show today to run a fake simulation with war with China. Like, really, NBC? Okay, thank you for that. We got our top experts, our military and intelligence state experts on TV to run this exercise. So let's add in nuclear submarines on all of this now, because the United States yesterday officially announced that it's going to deliver its first round of nuclear submarines to Australia to encircle China, part of the AUKUS deal, the AUKUS, which just means Australia, UK, US. Is that an acronym or an initialism?
It's an acronym.
Acronym.
Because you can pronounce it.
AUKUS. So part of the plan is to encircle China. And one of the ways that you do that is by arming Australia to the teeth with American weapons, nuclear submarines. And here's Biden's announcement on the AUKUS plan yesterday in San Diego with the British Prime Minister there, Rishi Sunak, and the Australian Prime Minister as well. Watch.
AUKUS has one overriding objective, to enhance the stability of the Indo-Pacific amid rapidly shifting global dynamics. In this first project is only beginning. More partnerships, more potential, more peace and security in the region lies ahead. Simply stated, we're putting ourselves in the strongest possible position to navigate the challenges of today and tomorrow.
So we're putting
peace through weapons. Got that?
We're putting ourselves in the strongest possible position through weapons.
Yeah, that brings peace.
So,
I would argue that the strongest possible position would be to get the hell out of all these other countries and stop provoking freaking everybody on the planet. You know what I mean? Like,
there you go with your extremists.
Yeah, you're extremist.
I know, I'm an extreme pacifist.
Well, I mean, yesterday on the show, we talked about the decline of the U.S. dollar and the rise of the BRICS nations and the rise of people, you know, these countries leaving the U.S. dollar, right? Moving towards a Chinese yuan, moving towards moving away from the U.S. dollar.
Which the New York Times says demonstrates that you can have hegemony through financial power instead of through war power, which is the way it seems that China wants to exert its influence through an economy, through a Chinese-based economy. The United States, because the dollar is collapsing, because the dollar is weak, and because the dollar doesn't exist in the way that it's traded, which we covered in the previous segment, needs to use guns instead.
Right.
And so if you have, you know, sort of like a wealthier economy where the currency exists versus a wealthy economy where the currency doesn't, you have to have guns to support that, or is
the threat,
is the theory.
Yeah.
Here.
It makes a lot of sense.
Right. And so Philip, you know, again, going all extremist on us to say,
right,
let's not bomb and kill, you know, but then how do you
such
maintain
an isolationist?
Yeah. How do you maintain a hegemony then?
Well, you do it with,
yeah, I mean, and I guess that's the point is why do we feel like, because I mean, they're provoking this war with China. Right. And so in doing so, like, we know that our military recruitment is way down. We're talking about, you know, we've run out of ammunition because we're sending all of our excess to Ukraine. And then, like, in that situation where we know that we don't have the strength to do it, is this just bravado? Or, like, how do they figure they're actually going to, let's say they succeed, they provoke China into a hot war. What the hell are we going to do then? You know,
right.
That brings up the, like, waking a sleeping dragon thing.
So then, can I just push you on the answer then? Because how do you maintain a hegemony if if you can't back up your currency and you can't back up your military? Are you saying then you don't? We let the hegemony go and be peaceful?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I know that's an extreme position, but yes, yeah. That is kind of my take.
Like that.
Well, because we would lose a war with China without a doubt. So they can absorb everything we would throw at them. If we're going to go try to attack the Chinese mainland, are you crazy? We'd have to literally travel thousands of miles and attack the Chinese mainland. It would be a disaster.
How do we get the gas to get there?
It would be an absolute disaster. So, this is not something that we can do. And we would have to then, of course, so this is all about provocation in order to drive people away from the Chinese yuan. It's about encircling them. It's about trying to make sure that they are not actively a part of this process. It would make sure that they are not actively other people are not trading with China. And so China responds. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, a lot of people seem to forget how much invested China is in our economy. Like, yes. They are heavily invested in our economy. And imagine if we go to a hot war, they just cut us off. Like, that in itself would hurt us more than weapons.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And so they would shut us off from all of the cheap televisions and all of the things that we want delivered to our front doors. Like, they would shut all of that down. And the manufacturing, of course, would absolutely be crushing. So, this is like literally the death throes of the U.S. dollar right now. So China says the AUKUS submarines deal embarks on a path of error and danger. So China responded to this. Beijing accusing the U.S., the U.K. and Australia of disregarding global concerns with the plan to build nuclear powered vessels. And Indonesia also responding. So Indonesia has a partnership, of course, and a strategic treaty with Australia that they are not allowed to do this. So what the hell are you getting nuclear submarines from the United States? Indonesia, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, writes, Indonesia has been closely following the security partnership of AUKUS, particularly the announcement on the pathway to achieve AUKUS critical capability. Maintaining peace and stability, they say in the next one, in the region is the responsibility of all countries. It's critical for all countries to be a part of this effort. Indonesia expects Australia to remain consistent in fulfilling its obligations under the NPT and IAEA safeguards, as well as to develop with the IAEA a verification mechanism that is effective, transparent, and non-discriminatory. So
you're not supposed to have done this, is right. What they're saying. So what?
Indonesia is basically saying, you know that agreement we have on not bringing nuclear to our back door? You just violated that. With this agreement, showing up with President Biden, and what does this agreement then mean for us? You're going to bring nuclear weapons on into Australia and nuclear submarines? This is a violation of our agreement.
I don't know. They're going to do it anyway.
Has the U.S. ever held up an agreement? I mean, at this point, shouldn't everyone in the world know that they shouldn't be making agreements with us because we never stand by them?
Well, but this is Australia violating their agreement.
With Indonesia. Like, we violate right, all the time, but this is Australia.
Right, but I mean, they're kind of like a extension of us, basically.
Right, yeah, they're a proxy. Australia is just an extension of what the United States is. Like, Australia is our utopia, is the United States' version. Like, if we could create, like, a...
Authoritarian
paradise. Like, yeah, what?
It's like a mini-me.
Exactly. That's exactly what Australia has become, unfortunately. We hear from a lot of our Australian viewers, unfortunately, they say, like, you can't even get proper news there anymore. It's just awful. And my heart goes out to you for the authoritarianism that you're experiencing there. So the mainstream media is helping to create this China fear and get us ready for war. Just look at these headlines over the past few hours. China shooting lasers at Hawaii so they can measure the island for a Pearl Harbor-style attack using green lasers. Chinese satellites are gathering intel for a Pearl Harbor-style hypersonic missile attack. Mm. And they even have handy charts here to show us exactly what they're doing with these green lasers. Really? Okay. False flag, anybody? False flag attack? Are we going to be as prepared as we were during World War II when we knew what was going on in Pearl Harbor before Pearl Harbor actually happened?
Freaking laser beams.
I was wondering what all those
beams.
Lights were coming off the bottom of those balloons.
Right. It was balloons, and now it's laser beams.
Well, and cranes. We've got cranes too. Remember?
Oh yeah, the cranes.
The loading docks.
Oh yes, yes.
Yeah.
The shipping docks.
So some in Europe are finally doing the smart thing and saying perhaps that we should not align ourselves with the United States on this. Former French ambassador to the United States today issued a statement. This is Gerard Aroud, says it's imperative that the EU defines its own policy towards China. It has no reason to align itself with that of the United States. Good.
That does seem to be the appetite for the attitude around China, especially where we live in Portugal, because when the United States, the former ambassador under Trump to Lisbon and to Portugal had published an article saying that Portugal needs to push back against Chinese investment, the national response to that was the United States needs to not tell us what to do about China.
Right.
And so there definitely is an appetite for let's not partner up on anti-China rhetoric in Europe with the United States. Let's let them do that on their own.
We'll see.
How much that, because that's not the attitude for a Russian response. Europe wants to align itself with the U.S. around Russia and anti-Russian sentiment. But it seems like around China, there's a different attitude, and I wonder why.
I don't know. And then finally, today, we're learning that China, Xi Jinping, is going to be speaking with Zelensky for the very first time since the start of the Ukraine war. So,
to which the U.S. may go cut some phone lines if they're willing to blow up some Nord Stream pipelines. Maybe they're going to cut some phone lines to prevent that from happening.
Well, why? Because maybe he'll broker peace. Maybe there'll actually be peace. Can you imagine how much that would be stick in the craw of the United States if he brokers peace between Russia and Ukraine?
Yeah.
It would totally undermine everything NATO and the United States is trying to do right now. And he knows it. Mm-hmm. He absolutely knows it.
It's like all good things happening to your ex. They do not want to see that.
I hadn't thought about it that way. So that's going to, that's our China story. And that's, we'll keep our eye on this. But the rhetoric is hot and it continues. So while you're being, watching your money right now in the banking system, they're ramping up this this hot war with China. We've got more news to get to. We're going to talk about this Somali attack and why the United States continues to provoke a war in Somalia and continues to attack and hit civilian targets there. And also we're going to look at the COVID hypocrisy. Eric Adams, the mayor of New York City, basically saying, hey, you wear masks, you're a criminal, basically.
I mean, masks on, masks off.
If you wear masks, then you're probably going to rob a bank is what they're saying now. Oh, really? That's different.
All right. But first, we'd like to tell you about private internet access. Do you ever feel like you're being watched online? You are. I just finished Edward Snowden's biography. And yeah, if you think that people are not watching you or at least, figuring out what you're up to online or censoring access to your internet, you're wrong. They are. That's why we want to tell you about private internet access, because that is a way to not only make sure that you're a little safer online, but, get access to things that you may not be able to otherwise. For instance, I like to read a range of news, but because of my geolocation, a lot of times these news sites are blocked from me, so I need a private internet access. But, if there are shows you'd like to watch in other regions that are blocked for you, that's all. I am super into Korean TV. Don't ask me why. They just seem to make super interesting things that I need VPNs to watch. For instance, I'm into this Korean show called Physical 100. Have you boys watched that? Anybody? Anybody else?
I have not.
No.
Okay. It's like super fit people in Korea doing athletic competitions, like hanging from things or throwing big balls. I love it. So anyway, whatever it is you're into, I'd like to know. So you can go to piavpn.com/redacted. Over 30 million people have signed up for this sponsor because it's a way to surf anonymously, but also access things that you may be not able to access. So head on
over
to...
Can I mention one?
Yeah, okay.
Really quick. France blocked Rumble, and we've had a lot of viewers that want to watch the show on Rumble, and they found out that they can access it from France through the VPN, through this
VPN. Amazing.
So.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, you want to watch us and you're in France on Rumble? There you go. So head on over to piavpn.com/redacted. You'll get an 83% discount. Seriously, that's just $2.03 per month, and you get 4 extra months completely free. But again, you must go to piavpn.com/redacted to enjoy all the benefits of a private internet access for that 83% discount. And if you've never used a VPN before, they'll walk you through it. It's super user friendly. You can get internet chat support if you'd like to, and they'll help you set it up and make that a part of your regular internet browsing habits. So we thank them for their support of this show.
And we thank you all for your support of subscribing. We know that many of you watch the show but aren't subscribed. Please, please, please subscribe to the show right here on YouTube and Rumble. Just hit that subscribe button and turn on that little bell notification so you'll receive a notification when we are live. You have to adjust the little bell, though, to make sure that you receive all notifications. I asked you yesterday, and I saw so many responses that said, no, I don't get YouTube notifications. I don't know what the deal is. So you just got to adjust the little bell, make sure you get the little notification. So that way, when we go live, you'll get the little... you know, update
and double check, because once a month YouTube goes through and unsubscribes people. So if you don't see the subscribe button highlighted, you have been unsubscribed. It's not a conspiracy. It's true.
Yeah. Look at your subscribe button. If you're unsubscribed, then that's why they've unsubscribed you. So please.
And for those of you who have never subscribed before, we just want to remind you that it's free. It's free to do. It's not a paid subscription.
Good point.
And neither is the newsletter. That also is free. So if you head on over to redacted.inc, that's all free for you.
That's an important point. That's a really important point. I wanted to clarify that, because Apple, a few years ago, they have their podcasts app. And they found that people wouldn't subscribe to podcasts because they thought they had to pay. Like, they had the subscribe button, and like, oh, I'm not going to pay for that. No, they're free. And so they changed it. Apple changed it now in the podcast app. It's called Follow.
Yeah, same with Overcast.
Yeah, they changed it. So now it's Follow. So when you hit the subscribe button in YouTube, it's free. You don't have to pay for it. Just FYI.
My glasses are squeezing the left side. Do you ever just all of a sudden glasses are...
Because you have an IFB in your ear.
It has nothing to do with that. It's just like somehow maybe my head swelled up on the left side. But
did you get hit in the head with another ukulele?
Have not.
I was just going to ask the same exact question. but Clayton beat me to it.
So anyway, I'm just a little uncomfortable today. But
all right. Well, then let me ask you this question. Okay. Why in the world is the United States... in Somalia and attacking civilians in Somalia?
Well, because that's the habit of the United States. We're going to talk about that.
We found natural resources?
There are natural resources in Somalia. If you have been following the Black Hawk Down incident since 1993, the United States has been in Somalia, and that continues. But now media reports are that the U.S. had an airstrike in Somalia that killed at least 7 people in January, most of them kids. Most of them were young boys, 3 brothers and 4 other young boys. So we're going to tell you about that. Somalia has been suffering from infighting from Al-Shabaab, which is an affiliate of Al-Qaeda. That is what the United States has long since admitted. And we're going to discuss that fight in a second, but first the details. Here, according to airwars.com, this is a watchdog group that watches airstrikes that hit civilians and non-civilians. And the reports are that this took place in January 30th. Local news reported 7 victims between the ages, the youngest was 8, and the oldest was 20. 3 of them were brothers. Here is according to the Somali news agency, Kasimada. Now, I had to use a Google Translate for this because I don't speak this language. So you will just sort of excuse the translation if it's crude. It says these young civilians who were killed were detained in a place where Al-Shabaab members are being prosecuted. So the 3 brothers were being accused of being a part of Al-Shabaab, but had not actually been. It was not definitive that they were. That's where the bombing was targeted. Some of the local people they contacted confirmed that 3 of the youths were initially arrested by Al-Shabaab because of the chaos in the area, while the other 4 were just taking them for lunch. And that's how they encountered the bombing. Either they were taking them to lunch or they were taking them their lunch. Again, the translation is not clear on that. The U.S. has admitted that it is fighting al-Shabaab, but the deputy of this district where the strike was reported said this. Speaking to the media, the deputy Mahas district commissioner confirmed that the deaths of the seven villagers as a result of the strike believed to have been carried out by the U.S. military. He carried on the military, both the Somali and the U.S., or he called on them to consult with local administration before conducting any airstrike to save the lives of the people in al-Shabaab-held areas. The U.S. often carries out airstrikes in parts of Somalia when the army of the country carries out operations against the areas where al-Shabaab organization is located. Now, I want to flash back to late 2021 for a minute here, because you may recall that Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin said that the U.S. would be more transparent from now on when air raids and strikes hit civilians. Remember this? This was in 2021 after the New York Times exposed an air raid on Syria in 2019 that was hidden from the public, because you may recall that an internal assessment from the Pentagon lawyers said that this could be classified as a war crime, this strike on Syria, where over 60 people were killed. Most of them were women and children, but the Pentagon at the time had said, well, 12 of them were ISIS. So we did get the bad guys, the other 48, well, collateral
just
damage.
Just so you know, they generally take males that are age 11 and higher and just count them as military targets because they're of military age, when they may have not been military at all. That is a tactic that they use.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And by the way, we should also point out ISIS, who we fund. So, I see. There are 11 ISIS members that we're funding.
Right.
Okay. Just to be clear.
Yeah.
And Al-Qaeda as well.
Now, kind of look at some of the language. Just, I want to skim through this document that Lloyd Austin said at the time when he said that the Pentagon would do better. Let's just look at some of the quotes. Like, we're committed to adjusting our policies and holding our senior leaders responsible. We'll work hard to avoid causing harm to civilians. You know, we can work harder. You know, we take this seriously. We're committed to protecting them. We have more work to do. Committed to doing better, right? I mean, this reads like a performance review at an office job, not a, like, we really should not be killing civilians. It's like, we're going to try not to, basically, is how that, isn't that what you get from that?
We're going to give it the old heave-ho.
Yeah, that killing civilians, we're going to try not to do that.
When you have someone like Madeleine Albright, former Secretary of State, who literally tells us that, you know, the killing of innocent civilians and children specifically is okay. And according to her, that she's fine with that. And, you know, that's just part of it's collateral damage. That's fine. She can live with
that. Well, this is what she said about Iraq, right? That when, you know, there are civilian deaths, she said it's worth it.
It's worth
it. That's specifically what she
said. And so just transpose that to any conflict that we're currently in, Iraq or whatever. You want to call Afghanistan, Syria, Somalia, it doesn't matter.
Okay. Well, we have not seen transparency about a possible strike that killed young boys. Not yet, anyway. And we are almost 3 months since this reported attack. So we'd like to see maybe a little bit more transparency, given that you told us you would, Lloyd Austin. And, you know, could this have been stopped? Could this have been, you know, this do better? Is this just, well, seven boys, so we are doing better. We didn't kill 60. But we have now seven. I don't know. But, you know, maybe that wouldn't have helped because maybe it wasn't military. This is according to antiwar.com, saying it's possible that the CIA was conducting those drone strikes and it wasn't the military at all. Okay. Well, why are we striking there at all? We knew this, in fact, because the defense budget of 2023 told us. Now, this is a teeny tiny little bit of the defense budget. I know that it's a terrible screenshot and that I'll get lectured later from Clayton. But Section 1210 of the defense budget told us that we would be, you know, equipping the military forces of Syria. And in fact, it earmarked over $1 million just for a report on how to do that. So the first part says that the Department of Defense and the Secretary of Defense would provide an assessment, and his budget to do that would be $1 million. But that's not the entire budget. There's even more. And this brings us to the question of why. Why is the U.S. there and what are they trying to accomplish? Well, Al-Shabaab has been the target of the U.S. for decades. And in fact, it was the group responsible for the Black Hawk Down mission of 1993. Now, here is a fairly concise explanation just to, you know, sort of put a crude why on it from Task and Purpose. This is a military publication. It's written for the military, as journalist Ann Garrison for The Gray Zone reports, but it's actually an unusually frank analysis of the role that the U.S. has played in Somalia. Here is their summary, that in the aftermath of the Black Hawk Down mission, Somalia fell into deeper chaos with attempts at creating a central transitional government failing to enact lasting stability. The country was dominated by disparate warlords, some with American and CIA support. At that time, local region's religious force emerged trying to instill its own form of order, the Islamic Courts Union, which was formed in 2000 and made up of religious courts that offered some form of authority. The ICU aimed at stopping the warlord violence and establish a rule of law, albeit one of Sharia law. In June of 2006, the ICU managed to oust the CIA-backed warlords and take control of Mogadishu, putting it under authority for the first time in 15 years, but that rule was short-lived because 6 months later, Ethiopia led an invasion of Somalia with American support, nominally to support the transition federal government. The offensive was supported by the African Union's mission to Somalia, as well as the United States, and other Western nations. So this is a military publication admitting how much the U.S. has been interfering with Somalia and for how long. In fact, the powers to do this came from the 9/11 era powers from President Bush, and they were expanded under President Obama. It was Obama, in fact, who started to use drones to strike. President Trump paved the way for more airstrikes, but then he actually withdrew troops from Somalia. President Biden took office and put them right back there. Many say the U.S. has interest in Somalia because of oil, natural resources, and geopolitics. Again, they are always trying to prevent a united Arab, any kind of united Arab states, meaning that they want to destabilize Somalia. But they're not alone. The U.K., NATO, the European Union, and the UAE all have their own agendas in Somalia as well. And is there an end to sight? No. Not according to Task and Force. They say that in January, the U.S. contributed $9 million in new weapons to the Somali national government. The Danaab battalion numbered approximately 1,500 in November 2022, but there are ongoing efforts to grow it. Most recently, an American airstrike killed seven Al-Shabaab fighters, so they are at least confirming this, but this is a different date. Saying that this happened on February 21st. So they're not confirming that it's the same seven. They're talking about maybe a different strike. So they are saying, and they're not saying that this was civilians. So given increased American involvement and no signs of any settlement, the United States fight against Al-Shabaab is likely to continue.
Of course. Well, thank you for that. Good news on, and the United States will continue to attack civilians. And I don't believe we're going to see any sort of like large reporting on this at all. Like they'll kind of pick and choose and cherry pick. And it
no,
seems to me,
if it were Ukrainian civilians, we would care a heck of a lot more. But you know, seven Middle Eastern boys, you know, it's up to us to care. Most people don't.
Let us know in the comments who even knew we were in Somalia in the first place. Who even knew about this attack?
If I mean, not
we
saw for the Jeremy Renner movie. Yeah. Was it Jeremy Renner?
Exactly.
Black Hawk Down was before Jeremy Renner.
No, that was Jake Gyllenhaal.
Jake Gyllenhaal?
Was it Jake? Yeah. It was years ago. That movie was 90s, wasn't it?
Black Hawk Down? Yeah, that
Are
was
you
Jake.
Sure? Somebody IMDb yeah. that we're probably all wrong.
Yeah, I think it's way before Jake Gyllenhaal's time. 90s.
Okay.
It's a great Mark Bowden book. If you've never read it, read that book. It says a great, great book.
Josh Hartnett.
And Ewan McGregor. Okay.
Yeah.
And Eric Bana.
We were all wrong.
The only reason we learn about these attacks is because, yeah, Tom Sizemore. The only reason we learn about these attacks is because journalists, largely.
Yes.
The only reason we hear about them. And then we get the Pentagon to admit to them. Just like we had in Syria. Like, we don't get these, or like we learned in Afghanistan. Right, because journalists were there and got the coverage, and then they ask about it and push on it. That's the only reason we learn about it. They don't volunteer this information. Otherwise, they'd be doing it every day.
I did send an invitation to Ann Garrison, the Gray Zone reporter, to come on and explain this a little further, because she had an interview with an interesting political rights advocate on the Gray Zone just as recently, I think it was January or February, talking about all kinds of U.S. involvement and how the United States has worked to delegitimize their presidential election because it was not a presidential election that happened last year. It wasn't that civilians got to vote at all. It was some kind of proxy. They say that Representative Ilhan Omar, who is a Somali refugee, has actually worked with them to destabilize that region. I don't know if that's true. I would love for her to come on and explain that, and hopefully she does.
All right. Well, we've got more news to get to here on the show. We're going to move over to Rumble in just a moment because we're going to talk some COVID. We're going to talk some things that would get us banned on YouTube, literally violations of their terms of service for the stuff that we're about to talk about from politicians who are actively saying it. So even though we're saying what the politicians are saying, we would still get blocked and banned. So we're going to continue our show in just a moment by going to rumble.com/redacted. That's rumble.com/redacted.
And Brian L., who just subscribed, we're taking him with us.
That's right. But first, attention, are you an investor looking for an easier way to trade stocks? And would you like 17 free stocks? With Moomoo, my favorite trading platform, there's no steep learning curve. It has a simple interface and it's easy to use, so even beginners can take advantage of the stock market in no time. Plus, it offers powerful tools often reserved for experienced investors like customizable watch lists and advanced charting capabilities. And now Moomoo even has added a powerful new earnings calendar so you don't have to hunt and peck trying to find the earnings schedule for your favorite companies. Right now, for a limited time, Moomoo is also giving away 17 free stocks when you open your account and make your initial deposits. So even if you never do anything else with your account, you get to keep those free stocks. And for our Australian viewers, Moomoo has some great new deposit bonuses when you open your account. You can learn more about the bonuses for our Australian audience when you visit redacted.inc/Moomoo. Moomoo has zero commission trades, and the app looks amazing on every platform, from iOS to Android to Windows and Mac. Moomoo can help you trade with its advanced tools like their stock screener and their earnings calendar. So no matter what your skill level is, you'll find fantastic tools that can help you trade. So open your free Moomoo account today and get access to zero commission trades plus 17 free stocks when you open your account and make your initial deposits. So to learn more, check out our link at redacted.inc/Moomoo. That's redacted.inc/Moomoo. All right. So now it is time, my friends, when we say goodbye to our YouTube audience because of what we are going to talk about. Censorship, you know, runs amok on this platform. We love our YouTube audience, but, you know, there's certain things we can't say. So come on over to rumble.com/redacted. Our stream will continue over there. rumble.com/redacted. Bye, YouTube. All right, welcome in, and as everyone joins us here on Rumble, nice to see all of you. Grab a cozy pillow, grab a blanket, grab
a cozy koozie.
Kick your feet up a little bit.
Not if you're driving.
Yeah, not if you're driving. And I was going to mention, oh, we do have a store, and thank you. We have a limited run of our store right now. So we've got a new T-shirt that's limited right now in our store. If you go to redactedstore.com. We've got a special T-shirt that you can see right here, which is our new limited edition anti-war shirt, silence equals complicity. So if you want to grab that, and that will stop running. You will not be able to get this shirt until the end of March, right? The end of March is when it's stopped, no longer available, the end of March. So grab it at redactedstore.com. Of course, you can check out all of the other great merchandise we have there as well, the hats and T-shirts and mugs and everything else. But our limited edition anti-war shirt, Silence Equals Complicity, is there right now. So go grab it before the end of March. It will no longer be available on March 31st at midnight, right? David, I think you said at midnight.
Yep,
be done.
It technically ends April 1st at midnight, but that's, yeah, March 31st at 11:59.
Okay, you're right, technically. Okay.
All right, let's talk about COVID. Because if you wear a mask, you are not a COVIDist. You may be a criminal. That is according to New York City. They don't want you to wear masks anymore. Hmm. Unless you're Jessica Chastain at the Oscars, in which case you can wear a mask and be applauded for it, actually. She thought that wearing a mask in the crowd of the Oscars would protect her, but she did not wear it on stage and she did not wear it on the red carpet. She wore it while walking through to the red carpet. And she also did not wear one while she traveled to Ukraine when she met with Zelensky just recently. Here's a picture of her doing that. And in fact, in most of the footage where she's walking around and meeting with politicians in Ukraine, she didn't wear a mask. So I don't know what her science is that she uses to decide when she wants to wear a mask or not. It is a bit more common in California. I was in California just in February. And, you know, people do wear masks quite frequently.
Right.
I would say more than in most places, because I was also in Idaho and I didn't see anybody in Idaho wearing a mask. No. So
I never saw that COVID made it to Ukraine. I never heard that. So,
oh, I don't know. Okay. Yeah. Don't know. But it does in fact seem to help people commit crimes. We reported recently that there are studies that show that masks don't prevent the transmission of COVID. In fact, there were studies as recently as 2016 that showed that masks don't prevent viral infections in the world. But they do, in fact, help with crimes. Who needs a nylon on your head if you got a COVID mask? Here is New York City Mayor Eric Adams, less than 4 months ago, though, pleading with New Yorkers to please wear a mask. This is in December of 2022. Listen.
We're at a very significant moment right now, and Dr. Fasan reminds us all the time during the holiday season. We come together to be with our families and loved ones. And during that time, we really need New Yorkers to hear the directions that are going to come from these two medical professionals of how do we enjoy the holidays and spread love without spreading the virus. And we could have that combination, everything from if you're feeling ill to stay home so you don't spread it to your loved ones. Make sure that if you're in surroundings that you're unsure about, that you wear face covering. And it's crucial to make sure that you are vaccinated and you're taking the booster shots.
Okay. So now, though, he is saying that the Bodega Association is pleading with him to make people to remove their masks. See how the tone has changed in less than 4 months.
We're not asking the bodega to tell the person when they walk in, hey, sir, you have to take off your mask. There's a sign at the door that the Bodega Association helped us create. Let's be clear on that. The Bodega Association helped us create a sign that says, please, upon entering, remove your mask, and you can put it back on. But think about this for a moment. As I looked at some of the videos, I looked at about 30 videos of people who committed the robberies in Canada, smoke shops and in bodegas. In each one of those videos, you saw the person inside walking around with his mask on. And if you did a real analysis of it, you see that, hey, this guy's up to something. So if you're refusing to remove your mask, don't confront the person. But now you're saying, wait a minute, now let me pay attention to this person that is in the store lingering around with the mask. We've gotten so used to the mask that we don't realize that there's a large volume of people that are wearing it, not because of COVID, because they're criminals.
Oh,
how do you know? I could be both.
Yeah, and look, historically mask wearing, you're not allowed to wear masks at all. I mean, there's an anti-vigilante law. You're not allowed to wear masks. Like, the only day you're allowed to wear masks is Halloween, right? Mm-hmm. So you're
Batman
not allowed to wear masks.
In jail.
Yeah, you're not allowed to wear masks. Like, look it up. It's illegal to wear masks. And so I'm talking about, like, you know, party masks or anything like that because of criminality, right? So, yes, of course. And this has been predicted. I mean, even the team at InfoWars for like 3 years had been talking about this, that this was going to be used for criminality. This was going to be used for doing nefarious things.
Yeah.
And here you go.
Well, I just want to know, what is the science that says COVID won't hit you in the face when you walk indoors so that you can get a picture taken of yourself? And then, but you should put it back on. Like, what's the science? Because he does want you to wear a mask, but, and he says you can put it back on if you're concerned about COVID.
So walk in, get your photo taken, by the security cameras in case you rob something.
Yes.
So somebody watching this, first of all, no criminal is going to be watching an Eric Adams press conference as a criminal. It's like, but okay.
Also, you can see that only one subset of the population will be asked to remove their mask. And then you're going to see people who look like, you know, like me. If I walked in with my mask, they're not going to profile me. They're going to let me keep my mask on.
Okay.
Because I don't fit the profile.
You look nefarious.
Do I? Really?
I don't know. I mean, think about it. Like Winona Ryder, she stole a bunch of stuff.
Yeah,
remember?
She looks like me. That's my Netflix profile.
Like 5 foot, you know, dark haired. Like, well, she seems honest. She's the one that's going to. I remember when I worked at the video store.
Are you telling me that I could intimidate people? Because I don't normally.
Yeah, you could intimidate people. Well, I wouldn't say intimidate, but you could definitely get away with theft. Because no one would suspect you.
Right.
Right? Like,
this is my point.
Like, I worked at the video store.
Who's going to be asked to remove the mask and who's not?
I worked at a video store and a mom came in with her stroller and stole a PlayStation from the store and put it in the bottom of the stroller.
Yeah.
And I caught them.
Was there a real baby in there?
I don't even think there was a baby in there. Mm. They didn't even have a baby in there. They used the stroller. So it was unassuming to me, you know? So you can't, I don't know.
Okay. Anyway, but you're right.
Now you're a criminal.
So there's no science behind this.
Right.
That is what we're trying to point out. And in fact, he said this, he went on 1010 Winds, which is the local radio station, and said, you know, look, we just can't have people walking in stores because we can't use facial recognition technology to find them when they commit crimes. And then a 1010 Winds reporter posted this on Twitter. This is a guy in Brooklyn using the mask in the COVID gear to hold up the store. And, you know, I just want to point out, you know, who else wears masks way before the pandemic is Antifa. In fact, the gear that they use is called Black Block. This is an Antifa group in Sacramento this weekend at D-Trans Awareness Day coming out. And the Antifa Black Block gear is not just black clothing and a black mask, although you can wear a COVID mask if you don't have one. You see that guy in the back has one. But also hats, helmets, hoods, and umbrellas, which they use to weaponize, pointy umbrellas as well, is not just to block out their face for if they commit any violence, but also to hit you with. And so people who yelled about masking in public, did you see this as an unintended consequence? I didn't. And given that we have to distinguish between taking off the mask and then putting it back on, you know, that really hinders our ability to argue the science about mask wearing.
It's ridiculous.
So, yeah, this seems to have really come back to bite us.
Yeah, it's like, oh, we wanted everyone wearing masks, and now all these robberies are happening. And then, of course, if you're like Lori Lightfoot in Chicago, she blamed, of course, the stores. She blamed the store owners for not chaining down their items and their purses and, you know, buying more security cameras that they can't afford and all of these things. So it's their fault. It's the bodega's fault. It's the store's fault. It's not this ridiculous COVID policy of forcing people to wear masks in public places and all of these different stuff. Like when you're in the park and you're walking the dog, you got to have that mask
on.
Well,
I just wonder, you know, I watched so many videos of people being confronted in a Costco for not wanting to wear a mask. And we were making fun of them. That was the tone of the videos. It was even, there was some actor who wanted to go to a Costco and said, like, look, they're not letting me in because, and we, you know, we called them COVID idiots.
Well,
and
we didn't.
That kind of thing. Well, yeah, like the internet, the collective consciousness. So then now will there be the antithesis of that, which is mask shaming? Like, you won't take off your mask? You know, no, of course there won't. There won't be the same kind of shaming of people who we think are criminals or, you know, hey, you got to take off your mask. And there's like a little old lady is like, but I'm afraid and I have COPD. And it's like, we're going to shame her for wearing a mask.
I know. Like I was at Starbucks the other day and I was sitting there doing some work and just having a coffee. And there's like a, I don't know, 30 something girl came in wearing like a Yankees hat. And she wearing a mask. I've seen her now a couple of times, like, because I, you know, like to go to the coffee shops. And so she's there and she's wearing a mask the whole time. Like, even like she takes a sip of coffee and lifts up her mask and then she puts it back. And then she does her shopping. And for weeks, like, this is like the thing.
Yeah.
And then I see like an old, but no, now it's odd. Like now to me, she stands out because no one has a mask on.
Well, I think that this points out the mean-spiritedness of those videos in the first place of yelling at people for not, and I watched them too. And you know, at the time I didn't know what to think and I'm not a doctor and I'm like, yeah, put on your mask, you know? And now I feel like that was mean-spirited of me to get into the spirit of those like making fun of people who were being yelled at for wanting to go into Walgreens and say, I have asthma, I'm not going to wear a mask. And so we're certainly not going to do the opposite and make fun of people who do want to continue to wear a mask. And I think that we all should sort of confront how we felt about that now.
No, our policy on this show has always been do whatever you want. Don't tell other people what to do, right? You want to wear a mask because that's what you think you need and you've read something that you do it, right? If you want to, you know, you want to wear a dress, wear a dress. I don't give a rat's ass. But the moment you tell me to do it, that's when I have a problem. The moment you tell my kids to do it, that's when we're going to have words,
yeah,
right? The moment you try to force something on any of us, we're going to have a problem.
This is the danger of politicizing everything because now it's so politicized that if you have on a mask, you're a Democrat. If you don't, you're a Republican. Like, you're a right-wing nut job if you're not walking around scared to death of COVID, and you're a left-wing person if you are. So it's like, it's just created factions again, just like everything in this country gets politicized, and that's a dangerous thing. We have to stop politicizing everything.
Right.
I wish. Yeah. Go back to the 1990s where we can have friendly debates about politics and not, you know, come at each other's throats where we, you know, members of Congress would go out to dinner across the aisle and have dinner with, you know, each other and solve things, right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, somebody on my stream the other day was asking, like, how come it's so different than the 60s and 70s with protests and stuff? But it's like, if you look at the gap between Democrat and Republican back in the 60s, it was probably like this. And now we keep moving so far this way. Like, we're so far apart now. It's like we can't even have conversations. We can't even be in the same room.
Yeah. I mean, when we watched that yesterday, that Pod Save America thing, I thought I was like watching another country or like another, it was people.
It felt like a parody.
It felt like people from another planet.
And I used to listen to that show quite regularly and I never felt the amount of outrage that I felt yesterday. So it's gotten really far, and politicized.
All right.
Meaning life.
Well, we want to say thank you for subscribing to the show and being a part of our community here. We do have a VIP community where we release videos early and exclusive content like, you know, interviews, sit down, redacted conversation interviews. If you are a member of our community, you can join the rebellion for as little as a cup of coffee once a month by going to redacted.inc. And if you're here on YouTube, of course, you can click on, or if you're here on Rumble, you can click on the join button there and join our locals community. When you go to redacted.inc on the left-hand side of your screen, you can sign up for our newsletter. On the right-hand side of the screen, of course, you can sign up for our VIP community for the price of a cup of coffee. Once a month, you get access to additional bonus content, including early access to different videos and things that we are releasing early. And so, yes, again, just you can support independent journalism by going to redacted.inc and supporting the rebellion. Sorry, I was getting all sorts of crazy alerts and sounds coming through.
You're binging and bopping over there.
Yeah,
binging and bopping. We're going to say goodbye so you can get to your alerts.
That's right.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us tonight. We will see you here tomorrow. Same time, same channel.
Yes, that's right. 4 p.m. Eastern time. We'll see you tomorrow, everyone. Bye now.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.